Chapter 12, Relation of the Human to the Hierarchical Center. True telepathic rapport is part of the supreme science of contact and has peculiar and definite reference to humanity. Many different terms might be used in the effort to convey some understanding of this subtle, subjective mode of relationship, and I have used, among others, the following. 1. The science of contact. 2. The science of impression. 3. The science of invocation and evocation. 4. The science of relationship. 5. The science of sensitivity. All these terms convey different aspects of the reaction of form or forms to contact, to impression, to impact, to environment, to the thought context of various minds, to ascending and descending energies, to the invocation of agents and the evocation of their response. The whole planetary system is, in reality, a vast, interlocking, interdependent, and interrelated complexity of vehicles communicating or responsive to communication. The moment that this interrelated and communicating system is studied from the angle of relationships, then the processes of evolution and the goal of the spirit of man, which is in reality the spirit of the planetary logos, become of vital and supreme importance, but are at the same time most difficult to comprehend. So immense is the theme that it is profitless for us to do more than deal with two factors. 1. The science of impression in relation to mankind. 2. The impressing centers as they affect the understanding of relationship. The many modes of contact between the many subhuman and superhuman forms, groupings, and kingdoms are too intricate in their nature to be grasped at this time by students, and, which is more important, the information would be of small use to them. We will therefore confine ourselves to the science of impression and the science of invocation and evocation only in so far as they affect humanity. These, from the human angle, cover reception of impression and of ideas, and expressions of the consequences of sensitivity at this time and in this particular cycle. We are to consider, therefore, the relation of the human center to the hierarchical center, and the growing responsiveness of humanity to the center where the will of God is known. As I said before, it is not my intention to give here the rules governing telepathic intercourse. Such intercourse is found between man and man, and groups and groups. The relationship is slowly and normally developed and requires no hastening. It is developing as the other senses of man and his apparatus of perception have developed. Humanity is, however, outstripping telepathic development in the rapid responsiveness of entire groups and of human beings en masse to group impression and to group impartation of ideas. The sudden response of groups and nations to mass ideologies has been both unexpected and difficult to handle wisely and constructively. It was not anticipated by either Shambhala or the hierarchy that mass impression would develop more quickly than that of individual sensitivity, but it has happened that way. The individual within a group and working within a group is far more correctly sensitive than is the man struggling alone to render himself sensitive to impression. One of the factors militating against personal telepathic development lies in the fact that the strong, potent, and modern ascension of the spirit in man, as a whole, frequently offsets personality reactions, and telepathy is a personality matter depending upon contact between mind and mind. The moment, however, that man tries to be telepathic, he is immediately swept into a vortex of abstract energies which condition him for spiritual impression far more than they fit him for personal relationships telepathically established. This surprising development freed the supervising masters for some of their plans and led them to abandon the training of individual disciples in telepathic rapport and to recognize the opportunity to train and develop invocative groups. Instead of working in lower mental substance with picked aspirants, they changed the medium of contact to that of the soul and launched the relatively new science of invocation and evocation. The lower mind then became simply an interpreter of impressions, with the emphasis upon the group mind, the group purpose, and the group will. This developing system of trained invocatives made the mind a positive acting factor and tuned out all tendency to negativity. This hierarchical decision then necessarily led to the instituting of the processes of group initiation, thus shifting the area of training and the whole of the teaching process and of preparation for initiation onto higher levels. The experiment of giving mankind the great invocation was tried and is proving successful, though much yet remains to be done. It might be said, therefore, that the four requirements which are needed to aid the disciple to meet the demands of the initiatory process are the ability to be impressed, the capacity accurately to register the impression, the power to record what has been given, and then to give it word forms in the mind consciousness. On the basis of the information received, the disciple must then properly invoke the needed energies and learn through experience to produce a responsive evocation. My earlier statement on this subject a few pages back was intended to lead up to this teaching, and I repeat it here. Quote, "The entire human family is today an amazing receiver of impressions owing to the myriad types of susceptible mechanisms. It is because of this that the human kingdom, the great middle kingdom whose function it is to mediate between the higher and the lower, is the subject of so much divine impression, conveying the purpose of Sanat Kumara. In these present instructions, I am dealing with group possibilities, with groups which can be trained to record, register, and be impressed by the hierarchy. Such a group can be in the position of being able to invoke the hierarchy with power, if it so choose. I am again bringing these things to your attention as aspirants and disciples, but from an angle different to those in my earlier writings. The responsibility of impressionability, of telepathic registration, and of invocative appeal is very great." Close quote. For the aspirant, and particularly for the conscious disciple, the impression to be considered comes from four sources. 1. From the disciple's own soul. 2. From the ashram with which he is to be affiliated. 3. Directly from the master. 4. From the spiritual triad, via the Antakarana. The first two stages cover the period of the first two initiations. The third precedes the third initiation and persists until the disciple is himself a master. The fourth type of informative impression can be registered after the third initiation and reach the disciple in the ashram. He then has the task himself of impressing his mind with what he has been told and known within the ashram. Eventually, as a master of an ashram, he starts upon one of the major hierarchical tasks of mastering the science of impression. There are therefore two aspects to this work of impression. One deals with the capacity to be impressed, the other with the ability to be an impressing agent. The disciple is not permitted to practice the art of impressing until he himself is among those who receive triadal impression, and therefore impression from Shambhala, within the protective area or aura of the ashram with which he is affiliated. It must be remembered that this science of impression is in reality the science of thought form making, thought form vitalization, and thought form direction, and only a disciple who has passed through the processes of transfiguration and is no longer the victim of his own personality can be entrusted with so dangerous a cycle of powers. As long as there exists any desire for selfish power, for unspiritual control, and for influence over the minds of other human beings or over groups, the disciple cannot be trusted, under the hierarchical rules, with the deliberate creation of thought forms designed to produce specific effects and with their dispersal to men and groups. After he has passed the tests of the transfiguration initiation, he may do so. The science of impression is the bedrock or the foundation for the practice of telepathy. If a major world test were to be made, those receptive to impression would be found to fall into two groups. 1. Those possessing unconscious receptivity to telepathic impression. They at present constitute a majority wherein the impression is received via the solar plexus and the thought forms thus generated are dispatched from the throat center of the one who is the impressing agent. 2. Those who are developing or have developed a conscious receptivity, wherein the impression is, first of all, received by the mind, and then imparted to and registered by the brain. The one who is the impressing agent in this case works via the center between the eyebrows, the ajna center. The first group of recipients are purely personality-grounded or focused. In some cases, they are only physically aware of the life processes and of some contact which remains for them unrecognized and unchecked or uncontrolled in any way. Under this group, we must therefore class all mediumistic phenomena, even those of the highest astral or spiritual nature, plus the messages received from the usually beautiful subconscious of the average person upon the probationary path. Messages from the disciple's own soul are intermediate between those mediumistic expressions and those which are definitely mental in nature. With this last-mentioned type of communication, there will be found, mixed, certain messages or impressions from the ashram which the disciple will be apt to confuse with group telepathy, soul communication, and direct relation with the master, a relationship at this stage non-existent. This will not greatly matter, because when the disciple begins to realize certain differences, a new type of registration will awaken and guide the disciple's consciousness. This stage, which embraces the second type of impression in its earliest forms, can be quite a long one, for it covers a very definite period of transition from the astral plane to the mental plane. The time equation varies according to ray and the age of the soul. Sixth ray people, for instance, are very slow in making this transition, owing to the pronounced factor of glamour. First and second ray people are relatively quick. Third ray people are also slow, for they are lost in the threads of their own glamorous manipulations and their devious thinking, and hardly know where truth begins and delusion ends. Illusion, which is the problem of the mental types on all rays, is far more temporary in its effects than is delusion. When the disciple has mastered to some degree the significant difference between messages from his own subconscious or the subconscious of other people with whom he may be en rapport, and the messages coming from his own soul, his life then becomes more self-directed and organized, more fruitful from the angle of service, and therefore of definite use to the hierarchy. He learns to distinguish the messages coming from his own soul from those which are hierarchical. His life becomes more clearly directed. He next distinguishes definitely and accurately the communications which come to him from the ashram and which are sent out to make impression upon the minds of aspirants and disciples of all degrees and of all ray types. When he can distinguish between these various communications, then and only then does the third type of communication become possible, direct messages which are due to contact with the master of his ashram in person. He, by that time, possesses what has been called the freedom of the ashram and the keys to the kingdom of God. He can then be trusted with some of the directive potency of the ashram itself. His thinking will then affect and reach others. This developing effectiveness grows with rapidity when the fourth type of impression is familiar to the disciple, that coming from the spiritual triad and therefore from the monad and Shambhala. There are consequently, to this final stage of impression, three lesser though definite states, each marking an expansion in the realm of service and each related to the last three initiations of the total possible 9 initiations which confront developing humanity. The sixth initiation, in which only masters can participate, marks a transition from the first three stages of impressibility required by the disciples as preludes to the fifth initiation, or in reality to the third, fourth, and fifth, and are related to the three stages of triadal communication, each of which is related to the seventh, the eighth, and the ninth initiations. Never does the geometrical pattern, the numerical progression, or the law of correspondences break down in the understanding of the purpose and the plans of the planetary logos, established before the worlds were created and finding their prototypes upon the cosmic mental planes. These points are peculiarly difficult for men to grasp at this time, wherein their state of consciousness is concentratedly individualized. Nevertheless, there is, on man's part, a steadily growing responsiveness to an expanding environment, as, for instance, man's recognition of the distinction between nationalism and internationalism. This responsiveness is naturally conditioned by human free will, effective peculiarly in the timing process. He may learn rapidly and fast, or he may go the slow way, but his state of consciousness remains one of a developing reaction to his environment as registered by his consciousness, and in which he, stage by stage, becomes an integral factor. This integration into his environment, his absorption of its atmosphere, and his potency in progression are all related to the fact that he is created to receive impression, and that he possesses a mechanism of response to all the facets of the divine expression in manifestation. It is for that reason that the truly illumined man, and all who have taken the three highest initiations, are always referred to as the diamond-souled. They, in their totality, constitute the jewel in the lotus, that 12-petaled lotus which is the symbol and expression of the potency of the planetary logos. You can see, therefore, how the theme of revelation runs throughout the entire evolutionary process. It must never be forgotten that step by step, stage by stage, expansion after expansion, initiation after initiation, the divine whole is realized by man. The method is impressed from a hitherto unrecognized environment. This only becomes possible in this particular form when the sons of mind, who are the sons of God, and whose nature is at one with his, began to move on earth. The science of impression is, in reality, the technique whereby humanity has been taught by the spiritual hierarchy from the moment of its first appearance upon earth. It is the technique which all disciples have to learn, no matter which of the seven paths they may eventually choose, and it is also the sublime art which every master practices on inspiration from Shambhala. It is a technique which is implemented by the will, and its consummation is the complete assimilation of the little wills of men into the divine purpose. It is the acceptance on their part of the promotion of that purpose through right impression on all forms of life at any particular point of evolution. Disciples then become agents of the divine will, and are entrusted with the direction of energies, with the plan and with the secrets and the inspiration which are hidden in the mind of God. To that knowledge, germinated and formed in the solar system previous to this, they add that which the present solar system has to give and to mature. The magnetic attractiveness of the second ray of love wisdom in one of its three major forms or rays of aspect, implemented by the four rays of attribute. This power to use the ray energies to attract and impress the constantly expanding revelation is the clue to all the work going forward today, and to this activity we give the name of the science of impression. It involves the constant opening up of a new environment, an environment which reaches all the way from the lowest grade of daily living undertaken by the least developed of human beings, to that point upon the ladder of evolution when the aspirant becomes consciously susceptible to what we call spiritual impression. At that point, he becomes capable of being more sensitive to a higher range of impression, and at the same time, he himself begins to learn the art of impressing the minds of others, to master the understanding of the level from which he works as an impressing agent, and to know who are the sons of men he can impress. He has to master also the secondary lesson of adapting his environment in such a manner that he can impress others, and the impression can find its way through his environing circumstances and into the usually inattentive minds for whom he feels a responsibility. This he does through a growing knowledge of himself and through learning the art of registering. The clearer and the more deeply apprehending is his capacity to register the impression to which he is subjected and to which he is sensitive, the more easily will he reach those he must aid towards a wider and deeper insight. This registering of his own expanding environment, with all its implications of a new vision, a new goal, a wider field of service, leads to the inflowing energies arriving on the wings of inspiration becoming a reservoir of thought substance, to the use of which he must accustom himself. The first step, then, is the fact of recording and of reducing into correct and available concepts, ideas, and thought forms that which he has registered. This marks the first stage in his truly occult service, and to this new type of service he will be increasingly dedicated. From the reservoir of thought substance, he learns to project those forms, those magnetic ideas, which will invoke the attention of those he seeks to help. This is called the stage of resultant invocation. It is an invocative act, an invocative way of living, which will find its way into the minds of men, and which will call forth or evoke from them a response and a widening consciousness. The processes of spiritual impression are thereby set up. It is also an invocation on the part of the disciple for further and greater impression and inspiration in order to increase his ability to serve.